From the Illinois 4-H Expo in Winnebago, Illinois, I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. This is the closing market report. This afternoon, futures in Chicago finished lower. July corn down 8 3/4 today at $4.41. December at 4.53 1/4, 9 3/4 lower in the March, down 9 1/2 at 4.58 3/4. July soybeans at 9.03 1/4, settlement price down 10 1/4. November, the new crop harvest month, at 9.28 3/4, 11 1/2 cents lower. In January, futures down 11 1/4 at 9.41. Bean oil up 4 cents. Bean meal down $5.10. July soft red winter wheat for the day down 9 1/4 cents at $5.22 1/4. Live cattle futures in Chicago, June contract 95 cents lower. The feeder cattle down 72 1/2, and lean hogs at $81.62 1/2 per 100 pounds. Finished 15 cents higher. You, of course, are listening to Illinois Public Media from Champaign-Urbana.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We're now joined by Jackie Vake. She's from Stuart Peterson to help us take a look at the marketplace. A down day in Chicago, a second one, Jackie. And I guess we don't really know why, other than maybe the market's taking a breather.
I don't know. I think that there was quite a bit of talk this morning about the fact that the tariffs from China are impacting the DDG demand, and therefore, you know, that would imply to the general public, you know, that we would have competing products here remaining in the United States. It would be more of a competition for soy meal. It is really not a competition for corn, but they still view it as a competition for corn, and so. I think that's what's hurting us at this point in time. It's a good guess. That's about as much as you can tell, because I'm going to wind that. I'm going to just take that right into some information I've got, Todd, on weather rallies and the length that we've seen, weather rallies actually run. And it's kind of interesting. In 2012, we rallied for 7 weeks, and then we fell off. And that doesn't mean that we didn't maybe rally in between, but we never got back up to that high that we had in those 7 weeks. 1993, which should be more comparable to this year, we rallied 2 weeks and then fell back. And then we rallied for 3 weeks and then fell back. And then we rallied for 9 weeks, which I think would be probably more comparative to what we've got going on this year, except for the fact that we've already rallied 7 weeks. So we've got quite a lot in at this point in time. And so, you know, you have your chart watchers who are looking at that, and I think that, that's having an impact on the market, too. We all know that, you know, how much information is going to really come out. The numbers that come out at the end of the month, we know are probably not very accurate as to what's going on. We saw the comments, and I know you have a Twitter out there about the USDA crop progress. I talked with Lance Honig this morning, who is the head of the crop reporting, and just to clarify, you know, that they talk to county agents, they talk to other people that they employ, and hopefully those people are talking to the farmers, and those crop progress numbers are really reflection of what they are planning as of this past week. But you can't say that for certain, you know, but that is, there's a lot of confusion about that, because some people look at it and say 77% planted times, you know, the March report numbers and blah, blah, blah. Well, that's not the way it is. And so they're trying very hard to be, you know, to get close to accurate. But I would suggest that anybody who wants to know more about it, listen to the Twitter interview that you did. And so, you know, it's a tough situation.
Yeah, so I do not have that up on the website, and it's not going to air here today, but I did talk to Lance Honig as well earlier this morning, and you are correct. Those are observations. And I think the easiest way to think about it is that it just means we stopped planting corn. Doesn't mean anything more than that. If you get to 100% or 80%, we stopped planting corn. And it doesn't have an impact on the acreage. And in that same interview, we did talk a little bit about the acreage report that's coming out at the end of the month. He knows it will be suspect at best. They stopped taking in information on that last week. So that's sort of where we stand on that at this point. You know, you were mentioning China. Can you come back to it for just one other moment? Export inspections, did they include some Chinese sales?
Oh, yeah. actually, this was the first week I've seen something this substantial. Mainland China, you know, there's always China-Taiwan or in there, but mainland China actually took beans from the Mississippi Gulf, Puget Sound, and the Northwest Pacific this past week. And sizable numbers compared to anything that they've done. We really haven't seen them hardly at all. And so that was encouraging to me to see that out there and to see that they're actually coming in here and taking deliveries. Puget Sound, you know, that's the Columbia River, Pacific Northwest. There's two different places there, Puget Sound, and we call Pacific Northwest the Columbia River. Anyway, it's good to see that happening because that is the major port for the Dakotas, and that's something we've been very, very concerned about. You know, if they lost that totally, it just destroys their markets, basically, is what it does. And so that's exciting. Something good news.
Managed money, where do they stand this week?
Well, they're long 15,000 contracts of the soft red wheat, 193,000 contracts of corn. They're short 39,000 contracts of beans, long 15,000 on soy meal, and short 40,000 on oil. Oil just can't crawl out of the short side of things. There's just not the demand there for it. But they've certainly made a big switch in a very short amount of time. And so, you know, part of the down day today could also be some profit taking, you know, because people are concerned, you know, we're getting up to levels that are going to entice possibly some selling or best some hedging that's going on. And it's possible too that what we're seeing here is, you know, the a lot of people shouldn't be surprised by a market that goes down if you start to see a lot of selling, because if you're selling to any kind of a commercial, they're going to sell the market for fear that they, you know, that they basically paid too much to you. And so just like when you sell, you should buy the market for fear of having sold too low, they do that same thing very methodically. And so that could be some of what's going on too. Maybe we've got some grain coming in out of the country. It's really hard to say.
And finally, the support and resistance levels. Have they changed much for the week?
Oh, yeah, you could say that. Support on July, 451, 435, and 408. Resistance, 475, 486, and of course that $5 magic number. Support, 454, 443, and 425. Resistance, I just use the round numbers here, 480, 490, 450, because there's just too many little digits in between. On beans, we've got July beans with support at 895, 883, and 848. Beans, resistance, 930, 940, 950. And because they're all psychological spots, as well as landing on some of the retracement numbers, these are weekly numbers. And on November, we see support at 921. 910 and 875, and then resistance 950, 962, and 976. So, you know, we're getting into the neighborhood here that we've really got to be on the ball, because, like I said before, you know, these rallies, especially a rally like this, is one that can, you know, yeah, can we rally again? Certainly, but will we get as high as where we are right now? That's the question. It's going to take a lot more information to get us, you know, higher sooner. I think we could be higher later, just like in 1993. We rallied from October through December. That could happen to us this year. But you just, you know, you can't bank the farm on that. You've got to take action. That's what you can do.
So what does your intuition tell you?
About what? What are you asking me?
So I'm just asking you about the year. It's so unique, so different.
It is.
You've been at this for a while.
For a long time.
And it seems to me that intuition is as much the psychological play as anything. For instance, and I've done an interview already where you'll hear some of this, but my drive up from Bloomington to Rockford, I can understand why somebody in this area would be just hands down bullish. And bullish to just an inordinate amount. Though I've not driven through parts of Iowa, I know in Champaign County and Logan County, while it's way behind, that there are some pockets that have corn, of course, in the ground. Actually, there's corn in the ground all the way up. It just, well, it's in the ground, but it's not really out of the ground very much is the big problem. So the psychology of the marketplace has got to be just an interesting study at this point in time, I would think, for you and for everybody else.
Yeah, it really is, Todd. And I mean, it always is. I still say 70% of my job is psychological counseling, you know, because these markets are brutal in a normal year, much less in a year like this. But I think my intuition says this, okay? You know, the whole situation is dire in some pockets in some areas of the United States, and I mean dire. And it concerns me that Illinois and Indiana are involved, so I definitely believe that we are going to see, you know, a lower yield because we probably aren't going to get the good yields like we normally do. But I do believe we're going to have a corn crop. I mean, you know, if you listen to some people talk, they talk as if we're not going to have anything hardly. You know, years like this, everything's going to depend upon how early the frost is. If we get an early frost, we're in big trouble. If we are like other years like this, our growing season has extended way out into October. And if that's the case, then I think that we have much less trouble than probably what people are anticipating. But I my heart breaks for these farmers, especially guys who are looking at their fields just covered with water and no chance to even put a seed in the ground, you know, where you'd have a chance for straight crop insurance versus having to take prevented plant. It's just demoralizing is what it is. But from an intuition standpoint, I'd have to say that, you know, that's been the focus of the market, and it should be. But people tend to believe that means that it's like that every single place. I've seen pictures of dryland corn, you know, in the Nebraskas that are just unbelievable, you know. And so there's pockets everywhere. That's the thing we don't have this year. We don't have a consistent crop in any state, it doesn't seem like. It's just been – and the places that have been hammered – just keep getting hammered over and over and over again. You know, it's like the storms just can't stop going across the same land. But then again, that land already we knew wasn't going to be planted. So it's one of the most challenging years I've ever seen in the 20-plus years I've been doing this.
Hey, thanks so much, Jackie.
Yep, have a good one. Bye-bye.
Jackie Vikes is with Stuart Peterson. Well, as you know, we're here at the 4-H Expo just outside of Rockford in Winnebago, Illinois, and we're joined by Brian Fried, and he's a regional director for the RMA, the Risk Management Agency, and he's talking to the folks that are involved in forage about some of the things that they can and can't do. We'll get into that in a moment, but what area is it that you cover for RMA?
All right. Our office covers Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, and Ohio, so it's been a difficult year across those states this year.
What should producers know about prevented planting at this time?
Probably the most important thing is to keep in mind the dates. June 5th was final planting date for corn, so there's 20-day late planting period. Producers need to make whatever decision they're going to make if they decide to prevent plant by the end of the late planting period, which ends June 25th. Then they have 72 hours to notify their agent of their decision.
So that's the first step. And then there are a lot of things that are involved after that fact, and Emerson Napsiger has written an article, Extension Agronomist at the University of Illinois, that's up on the Bulletin website. I did an interview with him, and most folks can find that at willag.org, and I think I've posted it already to the website as well. But there will be those who are interested in trying to put a forage here and trying to discover what harvested means in case of forage, because there is this November 1 deadline as it relates to how you can use forage, and there's some differences between baled and silage and those sorts of things. Can you go through some of them for me, please?
Yeah, we can talk about that. So you're allowed to plant a cover crop on prevent plant acres and still get your prevent plant payment. The stipulations there, you can't hay or graze it till after November 1st. The important thing, there is a difference between haying and silage and balage. So the way the rules read, you can hay or graze it, but you can't cut silage or chop it and do balage.
And the Secretary of Agriculture is working potentially on moving that date around some, but today it is November 1.
That's right. The Secretary of Ag and USDA is looking at what options are available, what they can legally do. And so when that information becomes available, we'll make sure and share that.
I know you don't make recommendations as an RMA on what kind of cover crops can be put into these prevented plant areas, but when producers do think about this, and they will sometime in the next month or so, what do they need to keep in mind?
All right. Well, you know, when they're looking at what kind of cover crops to plant, they should either talk to NRCS or Extension or an ag expert on what they should plant. RMA doesn't have a list of cover crops. We will have a list. We will have Q&As on our website. So the RMA website at USDA will have Q&As on prevent plant and cover crops. The cover crop, we have a few questions out there now, but we should have a better list as questions come in from farmers across the country.
So at this point, does that just about cover everything, and will there be more information later?
Yes. If anything changes as the disaster legislation details come out, we'll make sure and get that information out. For now, the most important thing for producers to keep in mind is if they haven't made a decision, they need to make sure and talk to their crop insurance agent first to figure out what their options, what their coverage covers, and what their eligibility is. And once they do that, you know, whatever decision they make should be at least fully informed and be able to make what works best for their operation.
Reminds me, there is one other item after the prevent plant dates have passed, the final one, so on the 26th of June, a producer could, on his corn prevented plant acres, put soybeans in, and that would reduce the payment from 55% for prevent plant to 35% if they're going to harvest them.
Right. If you decide to plant a second crop after the late planting period for corn, like soybeans, then your prevent plant payment goes from the 55% is reduced by 65% to 35% of that.
And one other note, you could also use soybean as your cover crop and not harvested, in which case you would end up with your 55% prevented plant because it's on the list. Corn is, for instance,
right,
as well.
And that's probably another thing that get brought up is sometimes producers are like, well, if I want to throw some corn out there on corn prevent plant, you can't do that. If you plant corn at all at any time, then it's corn, and that would take out your prevent plant payment.
So that's important. So can't put corn back onto a corn prevent planted acre.
That's correct.
Thank you so much, Brian.
All right, thank you.
Brian Frieden is the regional director for the RMA. We're here at the Illinois 4-H Expo. On this Wednesday afternoon, we're now joined by Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City to take a look at the weather forecast. Thanks, Drew, for being with us. It was just an awful drive, as my listeners know. On the way here to the Rockford area outside of Winnebago, I'm at the 4-H Expo, and I looked at this crop, and I have not explained it this way yet, but for you, starting in Bloomington, you think May 5, and that's about where it stands, and then you get to La Salle, Peru, and there's standing water, but by the time you get there, you have to think about it as April 4. It's just incredible what the weather has done to this crop this year. And then it turns around and goes the other way as you head the rest of the way to northern Illinois. What can producers across the whole of the Midwest expect this week, and what are your concerns?
Well, I think the bottom line theme here is we're going to see one more week of status quo, which includes frequent occurrence of showers and thunderstorms across most of the Midwest. The temperatures will be seasonable and not a very good environment for drying just simply because of the frequency of rain that occurs. Now, the established crops out there will just enjoy this period immensely, but because of the areas that were planted late or not planted at all, of course, it's still not a very good environment at all, just absolutely awful, as you have described. The forecast for the second week of the outlook will generate some improvement across parts of the Midwest. Obviously, it'd be too late for planting, but we're going to be looking at an environment here that will stimulate better drying conditions, warmer temperatures as well. It will help to develop a more aggressive crop development rate, and we'll start seeing some healing take place across some of these waterlogged fields across the Midwest that were planted earlier on. The opportunity for more rain, like we've been seeing it, is not very good. I think as we go deeper into the last days of June, early July, so we will see this trend continuing. There will be a ridge of high pressure that will build up across parts of the plains and the southwestern Corn Belt as we go through the second week of the outlook, and that should help to promote more of the same kind of weather pattern. So showers and thunderstorms occur over the top of the ridge in the northern plains and upper Midwest, and then down the front side of the ridge through the Great Lakes region into Ohio and Indiana. During that second week, this pattern will not generate a lot of heavy rain, but obviously there will still be some showers and thunderstorms occurring in those areas. The southwestern Corn Belt will start to firm up.
Did I see that you were concerned about weather getting hot potentially a bit later in this month or early July?
Well, I think there will be a warmer tendency. I don't know about hot. It's all a relative term, I suppose. What I think will happen as we get into July is we're going to be seeing an increase in temperatures, yes, because of the ridge's presence, but I do think that the majority of the warmth is going to occur in our nighttime temperatures. So we'll see those nighttime lows staying up well into the 60s and 70s, lower in some middle 70s, as we get involved with this high-pressure ridge. The afternoon temperatures might have a little warmer bias, but they're not going to be that far above average. There's so much moisture out there in and on the ground that when we start heating up this atmosphere, we're just going to percolate that water vapor back into the air so that the lows don't cool off at night and the afternoon temperatures just stay steamy warm.
Have the Canadian prairies gotten any better? They were really dry.
Yes, the drought up there continues to be very serious, but there has been a couple of rounds of precipitation in parts of the region. They are at the tip of their iceberg as far as seeing a change evolve. The same ridge of high pressure that's going to bring change for the Midwest is also going to bring increased rainfall across the drought areas of Canada over the next couple of weeks. And so I think that they have seen the peak of their extreme conditions. They've unfortunately lost some crop and certainly some production potential. But getting rain now and letting it continue to rain periodically through the summer will certainly help them with the bottom line down the road.
And finally, an update from Ukraine to China in Eurasia.
Yeah, the area from eastern Ukraine into Kazakhstan is kind of an important soybean and corn production region. They have a little bit of sugar beet in there as well as some sunseed and some wheat. And that area is just drying down like it has for the last 2 years. It's the third year in a row of drought in this area. And once again, they are seeing unirrigated crops stress pretty significantly. And that's going to continue for another week. Some relief will occur in the second week, but it's only going to be a temporary thing, a little bit of a cool-off and a few showers, but I don't think it's going to fix much. And it's also dry in China's North China Plain, which is a very important grain and oilseed production area. They also produce cotton there and rice. It's just a very rich farmland, and that area has been dry for an extended period of time, and it is not likely to see any change for at least 10 days and maybe 2 weeks, with temperatures in the 90s every day, pushing close to 100 and little to no rain.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
All right. Have a good day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City and helps us wrap up this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Don't forget to find us online at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.